This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to also acknowledge our sponsor, LUS Fiber, recently ranked by Harvard University as number one in the nation for price savings. A trailblazer in community broadband services, LUS Fiber can serve your telephone, internet, and television needs. For more information, please visit LUSFiber.com. And now for our show. Today's guests are Moggy and Pat Pastor, proprietors of some of Lafayette's finest restaurants in the history books, most notably Chez Pastor and T. Frere's House Bed and Breakfast. Moggy descends from the iconic Landry family who started Don's Seafood and Steakhouse in downtown Lafayette. Pat Pastor, her husband, has supplied the business acumen and accounting skills to keep things going. Moggy and Pat Pastor, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. We're glad to be here,
Jan. Oh, my goodness.
Just loving
it's great.
It.
Great.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
I want to get in. Hallelujah. That's right. I want to put in a plug for our friend, Fred Reggie. Fred called me and said that you two would be some of the best guests I could ever pick, and I was honored when you said yes. So I had no idea about the full history of your career in the restaurant business. And so this is an opportunity for our listeners to get to know your early career and how you got started, and including early days in the oil center, which is one of my favorite topics. So if we could, if y'all could talk about your early days. I know, Pat, you were an accountant for the Petroleum Club. Is that correct?
Yes, for 9.5 years, and loved it. I handled the books for 2 years, and then they promoted me to food and beverage director. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got interested in the food business.
And that was back, you started back in 1956, is that
56
correct?
56 to 65, yeah.
Yeah, so that was literally, they had just opened up in the early 50s. Right. Yeah. So you were telling me that there were just about 200 members at that time when you started.
When I started with them, there was about roughly 200 members. Uh-huh. And when I left, it was 2,000 members.
Wow. But that was really when the oil center and Lafayette was taking off.
Just taking off.
Growing. Right.
Yeah.
What do you remember of those early days, Moggy? When did y'all marry?
We married in 1957, had our first child in 1958. So Pat was at the Petroleum Club when we married. And I can remember those early days, but my deal with the Petroleum Club was I was allowed to have dinner with Pat in the office on Friday nights, and that was quite a thrill. Little did I know, you see, Pat went to work as the bookkeeper because he was going to get his CPA. Well, instead of his CPA, we had 4 children in 5 years. So he got promoted to food and beverage manager. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that fate? I think it is. Today, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I had no idea where the Lord was leading us.
Had you worked in
never,
the restaurant downtown?
Never.
You never worked at Don's?
But I cooked.
Okay.
I'm the oldest of 7, and my mom and my daddy cooked, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's Cajun. We cook.
Right.
You know, big pots.
Right.
Pot cooking, we call it. But life went on, you know, and when Daddy and his brothers decided to open Don's of Shreveport, they wanted to pluck Pat out of Cajun country and bring us up there to redneck country.
Uh-oh.
Well, I didn't know any better, but yeah. I didn't want to leave my castle, you see. Mm-hmm. I'd found my Prince Charming, and he was on his white horse, and I had my 4 little boys, and I had all my little friends, and, you know, whatever.
Right.
I just loved my house. Well, Pat and I had one of our first major fights. I stood in the room and jumped on the double bed, fussing, "I'm not going to Shreveport. I'm not. You're going to take everything away."
But,
he says,
yeah.
"I am going."
Mm-hmm.
And they took me to Mom and Dad. He took me to Mom and Daddy's house. And Mom and Daddy said, "You know, it's good for Pat. Y'all are going to do well there." You know, nothing could convince me. But anyway.
Off you went.
Off I went.
So that was really an opportunity for you, Pat.
It was.
You know, not having grown up in the industry as Moggy did, that
yes,
was a big leap.
I was allowed to buy stock in the company, And there were actually four partners that they sent up to Shreveport.
Right.
And all Cajun, mm-hmm. you know. And so, but we enjoyed it.
You were never
couldn't wait to get back.
You were never a chef, though, right? You were not a cook. So you went up there. I can tell, Moggy, you know, fighting and kicking and screaming.
Uh-huh.
And you had mentioned, and I just want to get this in. Growing up here, Old Lafayette, as people yeah. call it, Shreveport was a culture shock, wasn't
it? Oh yeah, I wound up in a psychiatrist's office 2 years after you were there, crying. Yeah, you know, those people look at me funny because I don't know what's wrong, but nobody's friendly. And he says, "There's nothing wrong with you." I said, "There isn't." He said, "No. My wife is from South Louisiana. You're going through culture shock."
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I ever heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense to me. He said, "I have a couple from Abbeville that he's in residency here. So, would you like to meet them?" "Oh, yeah, please." And we met them, and so we could compare. You know, I was getting my education, really, about the rest of the world.
Right, a support group.
Yeah, my support group, exactly. And so then when... how can I say this? We had two of the partners walk out on us. They both happened to be the chefs in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
You want to know how I got started with Don's Seafood Steakhouse?
What, like Wednesday when they left
mm-hmm,
or whatever?
mm-hmm. They sent, Don's of Lafayette sent their cook, we didn't call them chefs in those days, Big Bertha was her name, to teach the sous chef how to cook the to show him the rest of the recipes. Well, I just followed her around the kitchen and wrote down everything she said. So what happened is I have the first commercial restaurant recipes for Don's that was ever created was done in Shreveport.
Oh.
And that was so that would never happen again.
Right, you could be prepared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I had a basic knowledge of cooking, all Cajun children do, especially the oldest. But I didn't know restaurant portions, and I just didn't know how it worked.
Right.
And that's when I found out. And I, again... fate stepped in. I had no idea what the future held for us,
mm-hmm.
but that's where I got my start. And I loved it, by the way.
So did you work full-time? Were you working full-time?
More or less. When you own the business. When I had one more in Shreveport. I had a little girl.
I was thinking all these children and working and starting a business.
It was tough. But I would get help. We mm-hmm. had help.
Right.
And I would go. I did a lot of hosting. Once I got the crew organized and mm-hmm. The seafood theme going and the banquet room upstairs redone so we could have parties upstairs, which, by the way, helped Shreveport to be introduced to Cajun cuisine
mm-hmm.
because the clubs, we had a lot of the civic clubs come and they would eat upstairs and then the next week they were downstairs.
Right.
And they were discovering Cajun cuisine. And one of my favorite comments of all the people that have said things happened in Shreveport. A lady came up to the cash register as she was paying her bill, and I was standing there with my menus smiling, and she says, "I have eaten from Maine to Spain, and I have never had food like this." Honey, my head swelled up that big. It went from my head to my heart, mm-hmm. and I fell in love with what my family had done.
Yeah.
And I've been there ever since.
Right. Yeah. Did, I guess you were the first Cajun restaurant then in that area in North Louisiana. What did people like then? Was it the basic gumbo, bisque?
They knew bisque. They couldn't pronounce Etifi.
Right.
So we had to pronounce it capital A, number two, Fay, F-A-Y,
A-2-Fay.
They got
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
And once you get warmed up into the business and the people, and you become acclimated,
right.
more or less, you know.
And then they got to know you. And so I'm sure you had plenty of friends.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We both did.
We had a Cajun dictionary.
You did?
Printed up.
Uh-huh.
And it would explain how to pronounce.
Sha.
What it is, sha, dear. Oh, my favorite one was jambalaya. I found that out when we did Vermilionville. By the way, we opened Vermilionville in 1990 and had to do research on it with the UL mm-hmm. professors and all. Jambalaya, it comes from jambon, which means ham. Ala means with, and ya means rice. That's African for rice.
Oh, so that's Creole. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, you can call it Creole.
Yeah.
It's a fusion
of
three languages. Like, yeah. My term of what I've looked up for Creole means born in this country with roots in another country. That means we all Creole.
All of us. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. So you were in Shreveport, had the culture shock, and I know that you returned in the late 60s, in 1969, from Maison Acadienne. Am I pronouncing it right?
We, probably 68. Once my daughter was born, and we decided at that point that it had been 4 years or almost 4 years, and that we needed to come home. We just didn't want to raise our children with those wonderful, wonderful people. It just wasn't home for us.
Your family's here.
You can't take the heart out of the Cajun, I think.
Right.
And so we began to look for a way to come home. And Pat came up with the idea. He said, you know that old house? Well, when we lived, when Pat was at the Petroleum Club, I should say that, and Penn Hook Road, remember we talked about Penn Hook Road? Well, they were building the Normandy restaurant, which became Chez Pasteur many years later.
Okay.
But when we turned on that corner, I remember the roof going up, Pat said, I'd like to get my hands on that place one day. And I remembered that, and I told him, I said, Pat, you know, Lionel Jamar, that's another friend of ours, owns that property, the Normandy. I said, wonder whatever happened to it. So he called Lionel, and Lionel said, no, it was leased to Gilly Cabemori. It was the Normandy. It was a French restaurant. But he said, I tell you what, down the road, the old Horace Rickey house, I hear the Michauds are tearing the tree down in front. They're going to put a burger chef there.
Oh, no.
They had had a burger chef on Johnson, 15-cent hamburgers.
Right.
I said, what? You mean where I used to get my hair done, the old Horace Rickey house? I said, Pat, that would make a perfect restaurant. I got so excited. Well, he got even more excited. He called Louis Michaud. Louis Michaud got in his airplane the next day, flew to Shreveport, made the deal with us, and we were on our way.
That's
he
great.
Had 51, we had 49. We had to go open my first restaurant.
That's awesome. And that is the current Cafe Vermilionville.
Yes,
for people that are wondering what we're talking about.
Today it's Cafe Vermilionville.
Right by South College.
I should
Penn
say
Hook.
Then, after we left, it closed within 7 months. The people that took it or bought it, or leased it, I'm sorry, still belonged to Ms. Rickey, was Ken Vero and Charlie Goodson.
And I've had Charlie Goodson on the show.
Okay.
And what a story. But I wasn't putting all this together. So there's been some wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Oh, Lafayette.
Yeah.
In fact, they leased it and opened Roy Bean's Saloon.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Charlie
and
told the story
when
about.
When that played out, they converted it.
Cafe Vermilionville.
And right. Charlie went ahead and opened his Charlie G's.
Yeah. So just, it's really, it's such a deep history there. Yeah. So you were there for about a year. And then let's talk about the Lafayette Townhouse. For people listening to this, probably most of the older listeners would know about the townhouse. I didn't realize it was downtown, but it was.
It had begun downtown. It was behind Abdallah's. I forget the name of that street, but not the main, not Jefferson, but the behind it. Had been there in an old house, but very well established with what we call old Lafayette people. You know, people that we respected, that we grew up with, you know, that kind of thing. And so then they built this fabulous two-story, three-story building in the oil center.
Right.
And they had a swimming pool and the whole thing. And they hired Pat as the manager. And that's when I, again, jumped in. Fanny Carney, the older folks will remember her, and John Ozine, he was the bartender, and she was the lady who did all the food, and she was fabulously known for her meat pies. And I went to work with Fanny, and we decided that we should do gourmet dinners upstairs in this fabulous dining room they had with 12 seats and all the silver and china, but they never used it. Well, that's where I learned a little bit about what y'all might call New Orleans cuisine. I call it classical French cuisine. More of the sauces on the fish and the flaming desserts, and you know, Cajun cooking is really pot cooking.
Yeah.
You know, but this one was a little bit better, and I had fun with it. So that by the time we were offered, by the way, the Normandy after we'd been at the townhouse about a year, and I'll never forget that. We got a phone call one afternoon when Pat hung up. They said, he pointed to it. He said, they just offered us the Normandy. I screamed.
That's what we wanted.
And I just see God's hand in all of this. Because how in the heck this little Cajun girl that just knew how to cook Cajun opened that wonderful fancy restaurant? I had been practicing at Lafayette Townhouse all that year.
Right. So the timing was
right. The timing was perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do something other than dance was right. What I was told.
Well, Chez Pasteur, I moved here in 1983, and I just remember that as the premier place to go. And that's currently where the Blue Dog mm-hmm. is located for people that are trying to place where we're talking about. Can you talk about Chez Pasteur, like how you got the name, you know?
Oh, the name. Yeah, that's a good story.
It came from my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the Normandy had this... you see how it is.
I wish people could see y'all. I love this.
You can tell them, Pat.
Go ahead. No.
Well, they had this sign up above the windows. There were four windows in the front, and one of them said Normandy, the whole long word, and the other one said restaurant. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to use the same sign. Remember, we didn't have a lot of money, so, doing the best we could. And my brother-in-law came up with Chez Pasteur, and I said, that's it. It fits. It matches. That's perfect, perfect. And that's how it happened.
The number of letters were...
the number of letters worked. But I found out later that Chez means with mm-hmm. something. Oh, so it's perfect. It was
a perfect
name. You know? Yeah. Of course, it wound up being called the Chez, but that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. Yeah. So you focus more on the classical French cooking, or was it a blend?
We had both.
I love this menu.
This is designed by me.
There you go.
A touch of Creole and then Cajun hot cuisine. We had mm-hmm. both. This is what was so new for Lafayette, all the steak and fish dishes mm-hmm. that we did. People will remember, and I hear y'all, I know y'all there. Steak Diane was probably the favorite. Steak Supreme. A lot of Chateaubriands for anniversaries and stuff.
The fish. $32.95. That was an investment
Yeah. That was in those days.
Yeah. I would get the snapper.
Snapper Fontenot.
I like the snapper.
Yeah. This was the snapper Pasteur and Fontenot were mm-hmm. the favorites. Mm-hmm. But all of these were new for Lafayette because of the sauces on them. That's the classical French. This is Cajun hot cuisine. That's Don's. That's my background. Seafood mm-hmm. platter. You know, Chef Savoie, that was my chef. He had worked for my daddy and his brothers as a young kid. And he came in and I trained him, and that was his name,
mm-hmm. Savoie. How do you pronounce this?
Sweet.
Sweet?
Sweet. She's oysters. Talking about oysters. Uh-huh. For you that don't speak French, it spells H-U-I-T-R-E, sweet. Mm-hmm. But that's an oyster.
Yeah. This is beautiful. It just brings back so many memories.
This was the bar menu, which was very popular. Mm-hmm.
Boy, I bet people that used to enjoy this restaurant just mouths are watering as they hear this.
Yeah.
Great place.
Yeah, they're still watering. I still hear it. It makes me compliments us, our work, you know.
So during all this time, you were still having children. So yes. Your family was growing, even though you were growing in the business world. You were
still having
taking on new responsibilities.
68, Leah was born. Mm-hmm. Mary was born in Mary was born in Shreveport in 68. Leah was born in Lafayette in 72. So we had the four boys and two girls. And then to make very sure we understood enough. The message, mm-hmm. we had our seventh child, Jeremiah. And then John, my last one, when I was 43 years old, was in 1980.
So I take it you're Catholic.
Yes. Beaucoup, chef. Yeah. Beaucoup.
In fact,
beaucoup Catholique.
We grew very close to Fred Reggie because he headed up St. Jude's.
Right.
Yeah, that's how we met him.
I see.
The drive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lafayette. Mm-hmm. That's how we met him years ago.
He's wonderful. Very giving.
St. Jude's 82nd patient.
It was my son, Jeff, the oldest one. He was diagnosed with leukemia and given 6 months to live. But they gave him 6 months. It took them 5 months to get him in remission. And when they did, that's when they told us. It's like taking baby aspirin for a migraine. He had come near death 3 times. And the novenas had gone out, and everybody I knew was praying for us and praying mm-hmm. for us. And I was pregnant for my fourth child, who today is Jude Thomas. He's named after St. Jude's Danny Thomas. Uh-huh. We almost lost him. It was just a really scary time for us, but our faith brought us through. My mother was taking care of him because I was threatening to lose the baby I was carrying. I had to go. She said, the doctor says he's not going to make it. You need to get here. So they hauled me in my daddy's big black Oldsmobile, and we drove to Memphis that night and got there at 5:30 in the morning, and we went to the ICU room, but you couldn't go in. There was a glass mirror, and my little four-year-old boy was in a wheelchair, and I know what death looks like. And he looked up at me, and he said, "Mommy, Mommy," he mouthed the words. And it reminds me of those children today that are separated from their parents, mm-hmm. saying, "Mommy, Mommy." I mm-hmm. just get wiped out every time I see it. We went back to the hotel to sleep that night after spending a good part of the night there. When we got back the next morning, Jeff had been moved from ICU to his room. It didn't make sense, but okay. We went to his room. When I opened the door, my son, who was dying the day before, was sitting up in the bed. His cheeks were rosy, and he was stuffing food in his mouth with both hands. Oh. The doctors and nurses were all around his bed, all in smiles, and they said, "We have good news. He's not in remission, but his blood work took a dramatic turn for the better overnight. We're going to let you take him home for a couple of weeks."
Wow.
We had our miracle.
You did.
Oh, yeah. Jep didn't relapse. After 7 years, they took him off of all medication. After 11 and a half years, he relapsed. And he didn't make it. He died 8 days before his 19th birthday, but not before we'd seen him grow up and know what he, who he was and
made his mark on the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank goodness for
Danny Thomas. Raised motorcycles.
He did?
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to live, huh?
Big dirt bike,
he did
bike
live.
Racer. Mm-hmm.
He did.
I'm glad
fact,
we got
he
to
he registered
him.
At Southwestern University at that time, but he never got to make a class.
Yeah.
He made the big class, though, honey. He's high class now.
Yes.
I'm so glad you got to talk about him.
Hallelujah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So before all that happened, you were still blown and going with restaurants. I know that Chez Pasteur, it looks like it closed in 92. Mm-hmm. And I understand you had taken a sojourn to Florida to open another Chez Pasteur.
Yes, we did. Oh, yeah, that was bad news, real bad news.
Yeah.
We got in bed with some people that weren't Catholic. No, I'm kidding. They just went out. They were thieves.
So you came back and
we came back. Yeah.
And you
and at that
involved.
Time when we came back, that's when Lafayette was going diving.
Right.
And my dear friend,
the late 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She said to me, she's in marketing. She said to me one day, "You know, Margie, the public's fickle. You left them, so they left you." And I never thought about that. And, you know, it appeared to the public that we just went away. Mm-hmm. You know, we were coming back, but, I don't need to explain all that. It's just hard times hit Lafayette, mm-hmm. and we were in the middle of it, you know.
And I've heard from other restaurateurs that time it was brutal.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Pat can tell you some of the things he did to survive. Tell him about how you used to make your checks out.
Poor Pat, put him on the spot.
No. Pay everybody.
Of course.
Pay everybody.
Mm-hmm. With checks.
But we didn't mail the checks out.
Yes.
We held the checks. And when one of the people we owed money to would come in the office and we need payment or we're going to cut you off or whatever. So I'd give them one of the checks. But I had three of them for them. But
no I'd funds them, to cover
I'd
it.
I'd give them the newer one to where they think it's all paid off. And they didn't figure that out until they got back to the office.
Back to the office, because that's before computers really were.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've had Ken Veron, the young Ken Veron, and Charlie Goodson and on the show, and they have talked about they never really worked a day in their life, even though they've worked their tails off.
That's right.
They love it, and I've sense that with you. This is really a huge commitment. It's every holiday,
you gotta love
nights,
it or leave.
Weekends. You work around the clock, whether or not money's coming in or, you know, you want to keep your doors open. It had to be a struggle at times with the oil and gas going up and down.
The money, yeah. But as far as loving your work, you know, we still miss it, you mm-hmm. know. You always will. That's part of you, you know.
Yeah.
But T. T-Fair's house was a blessing.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's absolutely your most current venture. I know that you recently sold the venture because of retirement, but I have never been, and I didn't realize that it was haunted. Is that is that true?
That's the story, yes.
A lot of people probably want to come experience that.
And some did, some didn't know. It's just, it just depends, you know. It's when you at the breakfast table and one of the guests brings up something that happened in the room, like, oh, here we go, you know. We had heard it was haunted, but didn't put much stuff in that, you know. But it began to happen to us, I guess I should say that. We were waiting for the guests one afternoon, and we heard this god-awful noise in the laundry room, which was attached to the kitchen. And it was like somebody taking all the Shea Pastor stuff, the stainless steel stuff that we had stored in the back, and just vroom, brrr, vroom, pushing it off the shelves. And you could hear the clanging and the banging, and you know. And it stopped, and I said, "Pat, the ghost?" He said, "I don't know, let's go see." Now, we tiptoeing and we whispering after all this noise. And we get back there and we turn. We open the curtain. We put curtains up. There's nothing out of place.
Oh,
Pat says, "Uh-uh, there's two of us. Two of us heard it."
Two witnesses.
We heard it, you know. And that was our first encounter. And things happen to the guests, you know, to the bug man. He got chased from the attic one day. He said, "You got something in that attic. I ain't going back."
But you loved it. You loved
I loved
two friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you did y'all get into that? 1993, I guess, is when you found the home.
And then we had gone to work at the Hotel Acadiana and left there to pursue something else and began to think about looking for a restaurant location. But 50 seats only. We're going to do Shea Pastor. We can do it, you know. And we went to look at a location on Vero School Road, and it was an old filling station. It was painted yellow and green, bright yellow. And I said, "Pat, I don't think so." I said, "The Chateaubriand might catch fire with that gasoline next door." Anyway, we got back in the car, and we're driving along the Vero School Road. I said, "You know, the T-Fair house was on this road. I saw it for sale about a year ago." I said, "I wonder if they ever sold it." He said, "What's the T-Fair house?" That's how much he knew.
Right. Well, he's an accountant.
Yeah, he's an accountant. He runs businesses. I said, "It's a bed and breakfast." He said, "They got that in Lafayette?" You know, that's how far we were from knowing what God had for us.
And that always seemed far out to me. Lafayette has grown that way.
Yeah, see, we grew around the All Center. Anyway, we passed in front of the for sale sign, was still up, and I said, "Well, they didn't sell it. They'll never sell it in this kind of weather, this kind of environment." You know, it was a real bad time for Lafayette. Couldn't have been worse for us, but anyway. I went to call Janet Begno. She was the realtor on the sign, to ask her to look for us a restaurant location. And I said, "Janet, well, I got you on the phone, the T-Fair, She jumped through the phone. Margie, that's you. You and Pat would kill him there." I said, "You crazy, girl. I'm a restaurateur, and I made enough beds and cooked enough breakfast, raised enough kids. Margie, you've got to come see it. You've got to come on." I said, "All right, I'll go see it, but you're going to shut up after and find me a restaurant location."
Right.
Okay.
Margie, I want to ask you to hold that thought, because I want to be able to complete all that thought. But first, I'd like to thank Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission that have really made Discover Lafayette possible. We had early support from Ben Berthelot and Lafayette Travel.
Yeah,
and so I just would like to take a moment to thank Ben and all the team at Lafayette Travel for their support. To find out more about all our festivals, attractions, music, and restaurants, of course, please visit LafayetteTravel.com. So, get back to your story. So you found the place.
Oh, I was on the original board of directors.
You were?
Yeah.
For LCVC? I should have known that. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a great group, and they do so much.
I convinced the board to do the Acadiana Food Festival.
Oh.
Festivals I got there.
Yeah.
Him.
Wow.
That's when the music festival was in the park, and the food festival was in the Hyman.
Performing arts back.
Performing arts
back.
When did that start?
Oh, that's the one thing I don't have down. It was sometime in our early Shea Pastor days with Rita Davis. Rita Davis was the one that
Okay.
She's like me. She poked Pat.
Okay. So maybe 40-ish, 40 years ago.
She's good, though.
So T. Frere House, that was your last
big
investment, big push to be a restaurateur and, to, I guess, go into a new endeavor, the bed and breakfast.
Well, when I opened the doors of that house, I just fell in love with it immediately. I began placing furniture in my head, you know, that kind of thing. But I never say anything to Pat. We couldn't afford it. We get back in the car. My accountant husband says, you know, if we could float an SBA 504 loan, he said, I believe we could buy that house. I said, what house? He said, the T. Frere House. I said, Pat, you're kidding. I don't know. I'll have to put the pencil to it. Mm-hmm. So he puts a pencil to it, and he figured out how we could do it. And
no, it only had two rooms.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
You had to
figure out
two rooms upstairs that we would have to live at with the two kids. We had two boys still. Mm-hmm.
The babies.
So I needed to figure out a way to add on.
Right. You know. For the guest, yeah. Did you live there? You did live in the house.
Yes, we wound up, after 21 years being there, the boys had both grown and they were gone. But we did build two bedrooms onto the back of the old kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then we built the garçonnière in the back, which was six rooms. And then we built an apartment, excuse me. So we wound up with eight rooms and an apartment, a very nice size apartment for the kids to come. Of course, when they were all there, we always went to the big kitchen, you know.
Right.
Bed and breakfast is, well, for restaurateurs, is a piece of cake.
Is it?
Well, yeah.
People don't expect very
much.
Well,
it's just breakfast.
Right.
And hors d'oeuvres in the afternoon and cocktails, you know, and the rest is cleaning and housekeeping,
right.
You know. So for us, it was, we would have retired then.
Were you the only bed and breakfast in Lafayette?
No, there were 11.
11? Okay.
And
yeah,
when they check in, we had to tell them some good Cajun stories. You know?
Oh, that was it.
Did you make up stuff or?
No, Pat is a great, great Cajun joke teller. He calls them stories.
Story
and they just love
Pat. They're not
Pat's.
Jokes. You're not doing Thibodeau.
That's what he does. But he does it better than anybody you've ever heard of.
Do you have a favorite joke, Pat?
It better be clean.
Yes. I don't think we're rated. Are we?
I don't think we are. No.
Mm-mm. It's all adults. Is there any good joke that?
Yeah, think of one, Daddy. The way they can't see it. It just watch his face.
The last few ones that I've been telling keep coming back, blocking out any of them. But anyway, Boudreaux had about 20 acres of land in Kankton. And oil company went out there and drilled an oil well right in the middle of his property. Checks started coming in, royalty checks. He said, Marisha, he said, I've been waiting a long time. He said, now we finally got some money. We're rich. She said, oh, yeah, we're rich. He said, well, I want to get me one of them Harley Davidson hogs. She said, what? He said, I always wanted one of them big Harley Davidson. She said, well, go to Lafayette, draw the money out the bank, go buy you one. So sure enough, he goes. He walks in, and Thibodeau's working there. A kid, he had a Harley Davidson. He said, hey, Mr. Boudreaux, how you doing? Oh, he said, I'm fine. He said, what can I do for you? He said, get me one of them Harley Davidson hogs. He said, when hog? Yeah, you know, that big one, that big hog. He said, yeah. I got that, but he said, let me show you this. Fire truck red, 300 cc's, 80 miles to the gallon. You can't beat this bike. He said, that's a hog? He said, no, it's not a hog. He said, yeah, I don't want that. I want a hog. Yeah, he said, well, look here, royal blue, 200 cc's, best bike in the world. He said, you can't beat this bike. He said, that's a hog? He said, no, that's not a hog. I don't want that. He said, Mr. Boudreaux, you got to be tough to ride that hog. He said, I'm tough. How you tough? He said, you see that scar right here on my arm? He said, yeah, I see that. He said, 2 years ago, I was plowing my field. Passed too close to the oak tree. The branch hit me, knocked me off. The plow run over my arm and cut my arm off. Ooh, cut it off. He said, then what happened? He said, well, I pick up my arm, and he said, I ran to the house. And Marie, that's my wife. She got one of them singer, you know. And he said, man, she's so good. He said, she sold that back on there for you? He said, no, I couldn't find her. He said, I sold that myself. I said, you sold that yourself? Yeah. He said, boy, you are tough. He said, I'm tough. He said, come back this afternoon about 2 o'clock. He said, I'm going to have that hog ready for you to pick up. He said, yay!
So you kind of had to see it, but one thumb was up and one thumb was down.
Maybe it went on quite right, but oh, that is so cute. Thank you. I've never heard that one.
Oh, but you got some. He just wiped you out. You can't put it on.
So the visitors, I'm sure, loved the culture when they stayed with y'all.
And when they come back, they tell you they want to tell the same jokes, you know, which is good.
So they can remember them.
Yeah.
To share them. Can.
We have some that still come to Lafayette they love to dance. They're from Massachusetts. Every time they come in town, they call us. And we go to dance to eat, you know.
That's wonderful.
To see them.
Yeah.
And all their friends. You make friends when people put their feet under your table and you feed them and then you sleep them and, you know. Right. We have a wonderful memory of that whole experience. It really was beautiful. Yeah. I'd go back tomorrow.
Well, you're both so young. I mean, I'm waiting to hear about another endeavor. I think you're both extremely ready for another adventure, whether it's writing your memoirs or, helping others. And I do have a question. Do you have advice for young people, or I guess people of any age, really, that think that they would like to open a restaurant? Is there something that, you know, you've learned over and over that you think people would need to know?
You better love it, number one. I came into it with a background. I don't know that you need that. It just depends on what you know. You may be buying a franchise. I don't know. I'm talking about mom and pop shops. I'm talking about what we had, you know.
And you're talking about at least 2 years before you break even.
So there you go. For that commitment, huh?
Yeah.
So
you
better have enough reserve funds, you know.
Right. See, that's the story. We leased Chez Pasteur, a two-year lease, and after 2 years it was to buy it. And we, Pat used to sit there at night when we'd have dinner and say, we're not going to make it. You know, it's like he's just told you. That's what reminded me. 2 years it's going to take. And it was the beginning of the second year. And a long time, about the midsummer, this man comes up to the captain's table where I was seated, and he says, Miss Pasteur, I knew he wasn't from here, sir.
Like a banker.
I said, yes, can I help you? I stood up, shook his hand. He was Chrome Dome, before Chrome Dome was cool. He says, my name is Arthur Newman. I've been in town scouting the area. My brother and his wife, Paul and Joanne Woodward, will be coming to town to make a movie.
Oh, I'm glad you got that in. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll be staying. I've eaten here, he said, two or three times, and he said, I really think they'd like it, but you just have this one dining room. Could you possibly section off a part of it for the movie crew? By this time, I can't breathe.
Paul Newman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, which section do you want?
We'll just lock the door.
I mean, I'm speechless, you know, but it was so exciting.
Of course,
we took it, and of course, they came, and turn the business around. See, we had the bar business, but they never would venture into the dining room because it still had the old Normandy's reputation. It wasn't that popular. So they hadn't tasted, you know. They had the bar menu, which was a good menu, but not this classy stuff, you know, not the service we offered. And while Paul Newman was there, it packed the place. I mean, packed.
Oh, just
every
to get
night.
To glimpse him. And his wife. She's beautiful.
Yeah. She is, by the way. She does not show off
LSU girl.
That way. She looks like an angel. She's got that angelic look. She's beautiful. Paul has the prettiest blue eyes I ever saw, but I was so disappointed because he's short.
Well, you can't have it all.
Well, heck.
I know. So what did they like? What was their favorite? Did they have something?
Yes. She liked chicken noodle soup, which my mother cooked.
Chicken noodle soup.
She had that every night. And one glass of sherry, and she'd go back to the hotel while the guys would hang around. They pretty much ate, made friends with my maitre d', James Fontenot, who was from Villeplade. he took them around. He Cajunized them, mm-hmm. you know. And they loved all of that. It's great. Quite a time.
They were taped. Frank Cioso.
Yeah.
Who was part of the, mm-hmm. the cast. And he'd stay in the bar. He wouldn't come in the back.
Wasn't in the back. In the front.
Yeah. And
he said that these people, his attitude, Tony's, was that these are the people that made him, and if they want to talk to him, he's going to stand up and shake hands, and mm-hmm. he did all night. But he's a very nice man. Paul was just to himself. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess they have to have some kind of privacy.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, Paul wouldn't sign an autograph.
No, but what happened in the dining room, this is what was really getting me excited, Chef. Moggy, Oyster Orleans, this is fabulous. Oh, snapper pasta, that's all you heard. You didn't hear about Paul Newman, you heard about the food. Well, when they left, the crowds just grew bigger, and that we were on our way. So once again, God had answered our prayers.
And
someone
was a good scout to find your restaurant, because I know there are other good restaurants in town at that time.
Oh, absolutely, of course. Proximity to the hotel, too, Townhouse Hotel, which was another building that was built because of the Oil Center. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just thriving in those days.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both for being guests on the show, and Jason Sikora, who's our sound engineer, has busily been taking notes, and I know you've always got some great questions.
You stole one of mine. Again, the piece of advice for somebody mm-hmm. who wants to come up in the restaurant business, because I like those kind of questions. But my first question was, Pat, you were clearly going to get into accounting. That's kind of the path that you were leading. Moggy, if you didn't become a chef, what were your interests? What were you going to do? Did you have any sort of career path that you kind of saw for yourself, just like Pat did?
I had a secretarial science. That's what everybody did in the 50s. You either became a nurse, a secretary, or what was the other thing?
Teacher.
Yeah. Three things that women mm-hmm. did. And I really wasn't interested in any of them. So, and then, you know, having that many kids, that's full-time job.
That's full-time job right there.
I had no idea where the Lord was leading us until all of this began to happen, you know. And I fell in love with it. You know, I look back and how did I do that? You know, what? I had no training, but it was there.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
In the DNA.
Definitely.
You had talked before we even started recording, maybe we should have started recording right when you guys got here, that more deals were signed in your restaurant than were in executive offices.
Absolutely. Pat can talk about that.
Well, from 12 noon until 6 o'clock, you know, the bar was packed. But these guys sitting around that round table, mm-hmm. and they're talking deals, man.
It was business. You know,
mm-hmm. It was unreal.
So does that help with some of the success of your business, was the fact that that's kind of how it was done? Or not really?
Well, we created a habit. It was nearby their offices. He said 6. Some of them would leave at 3 and come back at 5.
Okay. But at the Petroleum Club, where I was at for 9.5 mm-hmm. years, we had a bar there. Much bigger bar than I had at Chez Pastor. And it was packed. I mean, and business deals going.
It was their way, mm-hmm. you know.
And all men at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It's just that until Judge Roy Beans, we were the only bar this way, but the Townhouse had a nice bar, a very popular mm-hmm. bar there.
And dining room.
And dining mm-hmm. room, yeah.
So this was all in this small geographic area.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was mm-hmm. it was booming
right
everywhere.
Right.
You know.
You had Toby's.
Toby's Little Lodge.
Toby's,
yeah.
And you had...
That was at Four Corners, right?
Jacobs and Toby's.
I love those
places.
And you had
Jacobs across the street from Toby's.
Yeah. Those were real experiences, along with Chez Pastor. Those were the places to go.
They were older, much older than ours. Mm-hmm. You know, we were the kid on the block, I guess.
Yeah.
And now we're the oldest.
I have two more quick questions. Do you still cook at home, or do you eat out more often?
When I cook, I cook.
Okay.
And I freeze.
Oh, okay.
That's for the kids. We like to eat out, still do. You know, we ate out for 35 years, so it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's a bad habit or a good habit.
Well, that leads to my last question. What's your favorite restaurant right now? And this is
for my own knowledge.
I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Shy, you want me to get in some trouble? They're all good.
There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah.
So many good ones. Yeah.
They
yeah.
really are. So and they clean choose. Up for you, huh? You
yeah. don't have to clean, they clean up for you.
Yeah.
I bet. Well, thank you very much for being here. This has been awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. I had a ball.
Me too. Thank you, Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions for taping our show today. And again, thank you, Moggy and Pat Pastora. I've enjoyed every second of this.
Me
thank
too.
You for this walk through your life.
You're
grateful
welcome.
For
I enjoyed it.
It
thoroughly.
And thank you to our listeners of Discover Lafayette. You can catch this episode and all of our episodes at discoverlafayette.net, our website. You can also subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that you get your podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift. Thank you.